Hello and welcome to the front page. We've got loads coming up on today's show, including Willie Mullins sweeping to Trainers' Championship glory, Sean Bowen finally getting his hands on the jockey's title, and a huge week at Newmarket and Punchestown. Delighted to be joined for all of that by Lewis Porteous and Matt Rennie. Welcome, gentlemen. Let's start with Willie Mullins. Lewis, you were at Sandown on Saturday for the denouement of the jump season, where Willie Mullins came with what's been compared to a Jamie Spencer-esque ride, sweeping by longtime leader Dan Skelton at the very last. His second victory, of course, in the trainer's title last year was, I think, historic. This year was simply extraordinary. What did you make of it, and what was the atmosphere like at Sandown?
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it made a smashing different narrative to the last few weeks of the season. And I think in racing's own parish, we really bought into it. Got to say, I thought Sandown did a good job on Saturday promoting it. There were regular updates on the big screens of the prize money totals, and they had Hayley Moore there reading out the tallies as the races went. And definitely the crowd, you know, they were on board, they were with it. Mm-hmm. And it made for just a really fun and exciting last day of the season. I've got to say, I felt for Dan, led from May the 1st to April the 26th and got headed on the last day of the season.
And going into Cheltenham, William Mullins was way, way, way down the list. Even coming out of Cheltenham, where he'd had such a fantastic festival, he was 1.3 million down. You know, some of the bookies closed the books at that point because we thought, well, you know, the only chance William Mullins got of actually taking this year is not just to win the Grand National and the Scottish Grand National, but to pick up most of the place money as well. Oh, us foolish mortals believing that would be beyond him, because of course he went and did it, and he just did this extraordinary clean sweep of the sort of big spring prizes.
Yeah, I mean, he was, like I say, Dan was 1 to 10, 1 to 12 after Cheltenham. Aintree obviously turned it all on its head. Like, what Mullins did there in the National was unprecedented, really. And it's Dickinson-esque. I mean, in a competitive handicap, it's probably beyond that, which was ridiculous. And then, like Dan said on Saturday, there was an air of inevitability. But to be fair, after the Scottish National, there was just 1,400 quid between them. Mm. And Dan got that back up to 70 again by Saturday. Yeah. So, Jesus, he didn't lie down. And he threw everything at it, yet still came up short. I mean, the telling factor was Dan was 180 winners from almost 1,000 runners. Willie Mullins, 34 winners from 204 runners.
So average prize money per runner, this is before Saturday, was just short of 18,000 for Willie Mullins versus 3,400 for Dan Skelton, which kind of tells the story. Willie Mullins' strength and depth at that top echelon of the sport is just incredible. And I think the sort of signature moment of that was beating Jean Bon on Saturday, which we'd all sort of said, well, John Bond's basically, he's undefeated away from Cheltenham. Dan doesn't need to worry about this one because Nicky's going to do him a favour and pick up the prize money. But Willie Mullins delivers a horse from almost a year off to take the money. Extraordinary.
Oh, the horse hadn't run since Punchestown last season. If you said to Dan, have you got anything in your yard that's not run this year that can beat John on a Saturday, he'd laugh at you. And then Mullins goes and pulls out a horse that does exactly that. It was astonishing. And then the very last race of the season, when it was all done, Mullins beat Dan into second. And it was just that summed up, really, the story of these last few weeks. But, there was some negativity about just how many runners Mullins was sending, but there's plenty of ways to skin a cat, and I thought it just produced a really fun narrative that we could all run with towards the end of the season. And it was a massive talking point, and I thought sport did well with it.
And away from Sandown as well, of course, it's enlivened not just the big spring festivals, but also some of the lesser lights. You were up at Perth for a few days, Matt. How was it up there? What was the atmosphere?
Yeah, and I was there as a race goer, so I was able to get sort of right into the mix of it, and it was fantastic to say that. I think that's putting it very sort of simply. It was absolutely brilliant, and it was a good, knowledgeable racing crowd no matter what. That's what you get at Perth. But they were all invested in talking when they were having their pints in the bar. Oh, what's the price? How much is Willie behind now? So it's brilliant that we've had that narrative towards the end of the season to not basically make it a damp squib, which sometimes the Flat Trainers Championship does, because it goes from New Year to New Year, and it's a bit of a different setup, whereas the Jumps Trainers Championships, on more occasions, as we've seen with Willie before last year, Willie and Nichols in 2016, I think it was, obviously Chris Cook wrote something saying if Vitor hadn't fallen in the Mellon chase there, then we might have already had Willie's three British Trainers titles, and obviously Nichols and Martin Pipe as well. So it's thrown up these thrilling narratives and conclusions towards the end of the season all the time. And it was really good that these little courses reap the rewards. Plumpton obviously as well got absurd there, and four, yep. I'm sure we'd never said 4 years ago Sir Gerhard would have been running at Plumpton after winning at the Cheltenham Festival twice. But it reaps the rewards for these smaller courses who have put a lot of prize money in and a lot of contributions and in improving their facilities as well, are getting the rewards of these high-class horses. And it was great to see, as you Perth tweeted that, or posted on X, that their attendances were up 10.1% this year for the festival. Now, the weather would have helped because it didn't rain for once up there, but...
So that's quite dry on the east coast of Scotland.
Yes, of course it is. I can't remember where Perth is. There we go. But having this narrative of the championship and Willie sending over these runners probably brought a few more people through the gates as well.
Of course.
So it would be lovely to keep it happening. I think the one thing we have to be cautious with is we don't want it to keep going to Willie Mullins, because if it happens for the next 5 years straight, we'll end up sitting back around this table going, well, something needs to change to make racing more competitive. As it stands at the moment, it's great, and I think Dan's only going to improve as well. I did note, you know, he could have done with maybe that one extra high class horse, maybe to win a championship race. He could have that next year in the new line, and that could be all the difference when it comes to it.
200k, the ultimate gap. That's yeah. what he needs a couple more Grade One horses.
Say if the new line wins the champion hurdle, then he's banging the mix, because he'll have a top class novice hurdler coming through, and probably a novice chaser as well, because Dan's now on that upper echelon of trainers. Maybe he's not in the absolute.
Well, here's a question though. So Dan got 3.37 million in the end, the highest total ever for a runner up. I'm sure that's an absolutely sickening stat for him. He was a long way clear of Nichols in third and Nicky Henderson in fourth. Is Dan Skelton now the number one British trainer?
I think he's got to be. He beat Nichols by 800 grand.
Yeah.
And so at this moment in time, yes, he is. That's not to say Nichols is quite bullish about next year's team. It won't change. But yeah, I don't think that's controversial in the least to say that he is.
I guess the thing that what some people would argue is that you've got Nicky Henderson, who's got some of these bigger names at the very top tier.
Yeah, but Dan has got, like Matt said, the new line coming through. And what he said on Saturday when I was speaking to Dan was, he said his owners are really buying into this now. They're as frustrated as him that he's not been champion. So the vibes are that they're ready to invest more. So this strength is probably, he's only going to get stronger. It's still a big gap to Willie, but I think in Britain we might end up with a bit of the gap lengthening between the real top trainers and the ones below, because the people like Dana will probably even get stronger.
Which we've seen happen as well in Ireland
yeah,
where
absolutely.
Outside of the sort of top four or five,
exactly,
you know, the people are struggling to get 10 winners on the board for a season, as Alan Sweetman wrote about in the Racing Post last week. So that the consequence of having someone who's so powerful like Willie Mullins is that it does drag others up in order to try to meet him, but then that gulf, as you absolutely rightly identify, grows between the top tier and the lower tier as sort of resources and horses gravitate to the very biggest yards.
Yeah, and we've seen that with some of the smaller yards that had runners at Plumpton and races like that were sort of saying, look, our whole season revolves around these big prize money for lesser horses to kind of meetings. And then they were going down there and they're meeting three of Mullins's, like they've not got a chance. So that will cause a big hole in their balance sheet come the end of the season. So I do feel for them. But like I said, I thought it was a net gain for racing, to be honest. But thinking if Dan can close the gap, all I would say is that Mullins did this without winning any of the big four races at Cheltenham.
Yeah.
He didn't win a Gold Cup, a Champion Earl, a Champion Chase or a Stayers Earl. And I can't see that happening very often. So,
well, but surely he's not going to get quite so much of the place money in the Grand National next year.
You say that.
Look, before we move on from this one, One thing I wanted to touch on, I wrote about this in an email I sent to subscribers yesterday. In the build-up to Saturday, we obviously had blanket coverage in the Racing Post, but beyond the racing sort of bubble, this one didn't really cut through, Matt. There was tons of coverage, of course, of the conclusion of the football season. There was loads and loads of coverage of the big fight between Eubank Jr. And Ben, but this one did not get any sort of mainstream cut through, basically. Let's cast that into a positive. What could racing do better in future to try to ensure that this kind of narrative, which is really interesting, reaches a wider audience?
That's a really good question, because I think in today's society, and it's not, I'm not taking sides in here, I'm just making the point, is that the difference between obviously the coverage, the title race in the Premier League was getting and the fight was these were human beings, whereas we're an animal sport, aren't we? And we know our position in society, especially when the Grand National comes around at this time of the year and before that. It's, we're not on a tightrope's the wrong word, but it's, we've got a different place in the pitch compared to
Mullins and Mullins and Skelton. You know, that is human interest, right?
It is very much human interest, and I have to say, as long as they keep being more open and getting involved with this, I think it will eventually go through. I think next year might be a bit different if Willie Mullins goes for it, because obviously he'll be going for a third straight trainer title from Ireland. Now Vincent O'Brien only managed to win two of them, I believe.
Yep.
Now we'd have to do ourselves then to really promote that, because that is, you know, history in the making there. I think we just need to, as Lewis said, we need to sort of latch onto it for a little bit. These are great sort of guns and battles that we have in the sport that isn't on the track necessarily and brings a good narrative off of it. I know Tony Mullins tweeted that a certain Irish publication didn't mention Willie Mullins' feat at all.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, that's quite staggering given Ireland usually loves to back its athletes and stuff, and they're very proud, especially on the international stage. So it's just about sort of keeping that investment going in. Hopefully, if there is the new series of Champions Full Gallop, it will help out as well in terms of being broadcast.
It will certainly give that a really
give it a real big oomph.
I think you know, my concern would be, while that's going to be a big story or a really interesting narrative when that series airs next year, you need to capitalise on
now,
these things as they're happening as well, in order to sort of grow and engage that audience.
Yeah, it's a tough one. We probably need to get a round table going around to realise how can we maximise its output. There'll be plenty of ways. We're in a great era of digital media, whether it even be through TikToks or whatnot.
So
we need to be pushing it. We need to promote. We need to have a voice in the ear of news desks, of TV stations. I'm not sure we've got that in racing. Have we got anyone pushing it to them? I mean, what I found most disappointing was racing is clearly ITV value racing as a product, as a TV. They've invested on the rights. But why, when it comes to the ITV news at night, isn't there just a 20-second, 30-second snip of the day? They've got all the footage. Is ITV racing talking to ITV news desk at the end of the day? I couldn't figure out on Saturday night why that hadn't just made a little.
Well, I mean, if ITV News, the host broadcaster of racing in the UK, is not giving this time, then what hope for the rest? We will move on though, because we have to talk about another champion, brilliant Sean Bowen. Heartbreak last year, when he missed out largely through injury, but he came roaring back, and a very feel-good story about him picking up the title on Saturday, wasn't there, Matt?
Yeah, it was brilliant, and fair play to Sean. He's been head and heels the best rider in Britain all this season, and we can't debate that. He's been one of, if not the busiest as well. But I was just going through his CV beforehand, and even big race wins, even though it's probably lacking a Cheltenham winner, it's absolutely staggering. This is a top class rider. I know. No offence to some of the others that we've had win it before, but they might be ones that are doing the circuit and doing wins away from the likes of Cheltenham and Aintree and stuff, but Sean's a Grade 1 winner. The ride he gave Haiti Couleurs in the Irish National, I know it didn't count towards his tally, was a brilliant ride, a ride of perfection from the front, and a great horse as well. Yeah. And as was the ride on Resplendent Grey on Saturday, but also at Perth as well. He demonstrated just how good he is in terms of, he's so strong, but he just nurtures horses into the race all the time. And if you're a punter backing a Sean Bowen horse, you know it's never going to give up. You're going to be there no matter what at the finish, even though if you're 12 lengths down at the line. But more for Sean, it's brilliant after last year. And you know he took that to heart. It was agonising that he got injured at such a crucial time and probably spent a little bit longer than he needed to on the sidelines. But he's proven this season as a jockey, he's the perfect blend of quality for the quantity. And as long as he keeps up that mentality of wanting to ride everywhere, whether it be Newton Abbott or Perth or whatnot, especially during the summer months to build up a lead, he's going to win it next year doing handstands.
Yeah, there's been comparisons to McCoy in recent days for his desire for winners, his stamina for the race, and for his strength in the saddle. Is that fair?
I think so. I think there'll never be another AP, but he's the closest thing we've had since he's retired. He's just such a great, positive champion and ambassador for racing as well. He's
real positivity, though.
He's a positive lad. Yeah. He's squeaky clean. Yeah. He loves his job. Yeah. He's everything that's good about racing. He really is. And I was speaking to him last week for an interview in the Racing Post, and he just can't wait for the new season to begin. It's like, you know what I mean? He's just raring to go. And I think what was important for him was the Irish National and the Bet365 at the end of the season. If there was something like, and it was maybe top tier wins this season, and then he just reminded everyone that he can do it, you know, little tracks in the week, big occasions. He could ultimately become that guy that when a big race ride comes up, they turn it to Sean, as well as numbers. I'm sure the quality will follow.
Yeah. Mark Holder, who writes a fascinating column for us, said last week that in 25 years of compiling speed figures, he's never seen a jockey whose judgment of pace is as good as Sean's. That is quite a statement. Where do you think he can rank among those giants of the last 25 years?
I mean, if he can go on a run of, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 titles, then why can't he go right to the top and be mentioned with the very best? Injuries is the ultimate thing that might scupper something like this, but he's got longevity surely because of his clean lifestyle. And I just think he's I really think he can rate up there with your Johnsons, your McCoys, people like that.
And often what you need to be a top jockey is a great partner. He's sort of by stealth one has emerged that Ollie Murphy has had an unbelievable season. So he was fifth in the trainer standings, his best ever return. He had a 25% strike rate, which is incredible. I was going through the stats this morning. In order to get anywhere near that, the next best strike rate by a sort of a big trainer, if you like, is 21%. Harry Derham and Jamie Snowden, who both had great seasons as well. I mean, that is an extraordinary strike rate by Murphy.
Yeah, and when you talk to him, it's a bit like talking to Sean. Like, it is so focused on, we want to win. It's winners. He's so hungry to succeed, and he's got a smashing place there in Warwickshire. Facilities are improving all the time, and he's got big owners down there. So again, he's a growing force. He's fifth in the trainers' title this season, and he's got aspirations to go even higher.
I know we said Dan Skirtle could be number one trainer in Britain currently, but we could sit here again 5 years' time and Ollie Murphy could be number two and very narrowly off number one. Because if you're an owner now, St. Ives looking at the stats as well, 25%, he's going to almost guarantee you at least one, two, maybe even more winners a season. Yeah.
People will be looking at that and going,
you have to be, and that can only be a positive for keeping owners in Britain. Obviously, we spoke on this show before about certain owners going over to Ireland to seek out success, but when you've got Dan Skelton and Ollie Murphy coming through as sort of leading that next sort of branch of burgeoning trainers, you put Jamie Snowden and Harry Derham in that, all of a sudden the picture for Britain and its trainers, and also sort of the wideness of it, looks really, really healthy. I think Ollie's a fantastic trainer. I'm sure him and Sean will be itching to get that Cheltenham winner, a big Cheltenham winner off their back soon. Obviously, he had a strong leader, but it's only a matter of time for them. And also just with Sean as well, fair dues, he's another one from the Paul Nicholls Academy of Excellence, isn't he? Also yes, with Freddie Gingell winning the conditional titles. You think, how many jockeys have come through that ranks? Obviously, Darrell Jacob and Nick Schofield recently retired came through that as well. But yeah. It's also good that in a way it's Sean and Harry Cobden, obviously Nichols' leading rider, who we'd say Sean's in the mould of AP and Harry's in the mould of Ruby Walsh. Both AP and Ruby came from the other side of the Irish Sea. We're showcasing the best that the British jockeys have to offer as well. So it's all in a very, very good place going into next season and beyond.
Yeah, massive congratulations to all the champions from Saturday. We're going to move on because it's not slowing down. We've got a huge week ahead. Let's start with the Punchdown Festival beginning tomorrow. Probably the biggest profile clash over the 5 days is Contrecoeur and Hill, who is bidding to come back from two consecutive falls. That unbeaten record totally torn up and thrown away. Interestingly, schooled over fences yesterday. Nicky Henderson said, don't read anything into it. So obviously people are reading things into it. What do we think? He's got a long, he's a big comeback. And of course he's got a new jockey as well, James Bowen, taking the ride with Nico, unfortunately injured.
No pressure there for James. It's never boring, is it, with Constitution Hill? No. And it's going to be a great build-up this week. I was quite interested to hear Nicky say that's the first time he's left the ground since Aintree. So he's fallen twice. Yeah. And I just wondered, I half thought there'd be like intense schooling, but yeah. That's the
maybe
first
he's
take time.
Maybe he's taking a leaf out of Willie Mullins. He's like, what's his like? Oh, they don't need to jump at all.
Yeah, straight out of the field and onto So, I thought it was a bit of a googly when he said he schooled over fences yesterday. I didn't see that coming, but like you say, he said play down. Who'd have thought we'd be here at this stage of the season, falling the Champion Hurdle, falling the Aintree Hurdle, and now, and like, he's even money in places. Like, crikey, that's a big risk for a horse that has fallen twice. Good luck to James Bowen. I hope he goes swimmingly, but State Man's in there, and Lozzie Mouth may or may not run because she's got the Saturday. It's a huge race with classy opponents, and you'll be hold your breath time, won't it?
Yeah, Matt, shade of odds on. Just shade of odds against, actually, I think, currently. Would you be a backer?
Encouraging people to gamble responsibly, absolutely so. Look, I know he's fallen and twice, but this is Constitution Hill we're talking about. This is one of the greatest hurdles we've ever seen. He just needs to learn to pick his feet up again, and then he'll be absolutely fine. I'd love to see him just bowl along in front, just so he can see the hurdles himself and just let him work out to respect them. That's probably why Willie's quite about, I don't let them jump them because I want them to respect them when they actually see them, instead of getting too complacent. I reckon it could work, you know. And fair play to Nicky and Michael for going over there as well. They could have easily pulled the plug after Cheltenham when he fell. They could have, everyone would have been fine after Aintree, because that was a pearler of a fall he took. I was there, and thankfully he was absolutely sound as a pound afterwards. They could have pulled the plug there, but they've gone, no, we're going to Punchestown. And obviously they've been, in some ways, they've been criticised, and some may say quite rightly, and some quite not, for not running him enough in the past, but they're going again, and
good for them. Good for them.
Constitution Hill was I thought he was tanking when he was coming into Lossie Mouth, and she didn't beat Wadoo by far in the Aintree hurdles, so I don't think she was at her best. So I'm very happy to be there, and it's great for Punchestown as well, because I was at Punchestown last year and had a bit more of an end of season coronating all those winners, sort of odds on favourites winning the big races, even though Gallop and Deschamps lost. Whereas this year, there's still so many narratives left for it to be an absolutely top class meeting. Factor File on Tuesday dropping down to 2 miles against Paris Nationale. Will Gallop and Deschamps actually win the Punchestown Gold Cup on Wednesday? The big 3 mile hurdle on the Thursdays, absolutely no gimme for Teopi. Then you've got a barnstorming Punchestown Champion Hurdle. It's great for that meeting to have so many narratives there, and because of that, it'll leave us with so many questions to answer next season as well. So when the Guineas rolls around on Saturday, a lot of us will already be thinking towards the Charlie Hull and what's going to happen in from there and beyond as well.
Absolutely. Well, look, we have a treat in store at Newmarket as well. Both the Guineas shaping up to be incredibly interesting. Let's start with the Colts, Lewis. Field of Gold got a serious buzz about him after his trial win.
Yeah, he looked awesome in the Craven. Also looked like a horse that had done really well from two to three, and they also thought he'd improve for the run. So I think he's around a 2-1 shot. Off that Craven, performance. I thought that was very fair. Personally, I'd love to see Kieran Schumark get a classic. I thought he was some at times harshly criticised last season, but he's a real sort of level-headed lad.
There's a really good interview. I would say this, really good interview in the paper yesterday. Peter Thomas talking to Kieran just came across as incredibly well-grounded. Really got the not just his own sort of mentality set, but like an appreciation of the bigger picture. I just thought it was really impressive for a man of still comparatively fairly young age.
So level he came across, didn't he? Brilliant, really got under the skin. It's a great piece. I don't think the pressure of a big occasion is going to get to him. I hope and think he's on the winner.
2,000 guineas for you?
A field of gold would be head and heels above, but it's still quite an, even the lack of the lying in winter being there, still quite an interesting race because you're after August Rodin and City of Troy's blowouts of the last two runnings, you're left wondering, do Ballydoyle really intensely focus on having a 2,000 guineas winner anymore? They've had plenty in the past, but it'd be really good for Field Gold, obviously. It's the next conveyor belt of Judmont superstars after Blue Stocking retired last year from the Arc. Field of Gold could be an absolute flag bearer this season. And the form of the Jean-Luc Lagardère on bottomless ground, which he seemed to not thrive, is working out okay, really, with the winner who got narrowly beaten, given weight away against older horses earlier in the season. So it's all stacking up very, very well, as you said. It'd be good for Kieran as well, and it just proves that racing is a sport of swings and roundabouts, really. It all comes round in the end.
Yeah, he had a tough year last year, where taking on a huge job, didn't have the strength of horses in the yard that they'd had in prior years. So it's always going to be a tough year, but he obviously capped it in pretty good style and potentially has a monster colt in the 2,000 guineas. Let's turn to the fillies. We've got Desert Flower for Charlie Appleby burning up the gallops in Newmarket. Hopefully late Victoria for Aidan O'Brien, battle of the undefeated fillies.
Well, that's an absolute humdinger of a clash if they do turn up. It would be really, really good if late Victoria does turn up and provide that element because Desert Flower has looked unstoppable on the, well, she did last season at 2-2, but obviously there's the 2-3 element, and also at the Craven meeting, Charlie Appleby had a fair few winners, but Opera Ballo and a few of the other big guns didn't run up to scratch really. So it does leave you wondering on that pretense. But from a personal point of view, I always used to go. It was the very first race I ever went to as a child was the 1,000 guineas. So it's always a favourite race of mine. It'd be good to really get the flat season rocking and rolling now after the jump scene. I said to someone, this is probably one of the best weeks in racing we could ever really hope for. It's the absolute best of both worlds because we've also got the Kentucky Derby on the Saturday night, I hope, as well.
We do. We're absolutely spoiled for pleasure this week. Let's wrap up a few more stories before we bring today's show to a close. Let's first of all, Race for the Crown, Netflix. Netflix has finally come to horse racing with a sort of pretty big budget documentary following the US Triple Crown. It's got some decent early reviews, particularly in the racing firmament, but I also saw the Wall Street Journal giving it a very nice rate up, which is good to see. Can it bring eyeballs to the sport in the same way that some of these big shows have done for other sports?
I mean, time will tell, but having watched it this week, I've got to say, they made a bloody good fist of it. I thought it was really impressive. What I liked about it is they don't try and cover too much ground. It's on that. It's from the Kentucky Derby through to the Preakness, to the Belmont Stakes. Sorry. So it's all about the Triple Crown. So they're not trying to cover too much ground, and that means you can really get to know the main characters who are involved in this chase for the three classics out there. And the other thing is, for someone just picking it up without having maybe the knowledge about racing, doing it that way, it's easy to understand. They don't have to keep flipping to talking heads, trying to explain what's happening. Because there was times in Full Gallop towards the end where you just lost the live narrative of it. They kept going away from it. It's like, no, let's, you know.
There was a lot of ITV talking heads in Full Gallop, wasn't there? Which they over-indexed on in retrospect.
You don't need someone to tell you that. Sort of Shark Hanlon's come from a humble beginning. He can tell you that, and that's what this does. It lets the characters sort of speak for themselves. It's very easy viewing. It's a strong narrative throughout. There's some good characters in America as well. But I exactly, I'm coming from it from a racing insider, and I enjoyed it. I do hope that people stumble upon it, and they, I'm sure they will stick with it if they do press play on it.
And sort of in a sense, US racing is a good fit for this, because if you contrast it to the flat in Britain, I'm not sure our owners would be quite as colourful, certainly not the ones who are competing for classics.
Yeah, definitely so, but that's exactly what a show like that needs. I know you went back to the Talking Heads bit, but that's what, for me, I'd have loved to have seen a little bit less of on Champions Full Gallop, because the whole point of these documentaries is you want to be immersed in it, you want to be feeling like you are with them on the journey and right in there, rather than being taken back to a sort of another estate in a way and taken away from that narrative. It's great that Netflix have got on board with it, because it's Box Docs Productions. I loved The Full Swing, which was their golf documentary. I'm not a fan of F1, so I didn't watch Drive to Survive, but obviously that's done incredibly well as well. And having the major platform doing a series like this with the major production company, this could be a big kicking starting point for racing. And hopefully, they said they might do an international one. The whole point of, as you said, about doing it at the Triple Crown was it kept it nice and compact.
Yeah.
But then it can also blossom in a way, couldn't it? So we could then go on to the international stage, Hong Kong, you know, Royal Ascot, etc. And we could have it like a global series, like Drive to Survive, and following it that way. But I just think it's very, very huge that Netflix have got it. Obviously, a football fan, I'm a Sunderland fan, and whether we liked it or not, but Sunderland Till I Died has brought us right back into the limelight, even though it was at a really bad stage in our football team. But the exposure it got was massive. You know, people come up to us saying about that, and hopefully it can do that for racing as well. I think it's really big that Netflix are on it.
Only positive for the sport. Less positive for the sport was the story recently about Ladbrokes declining or refusing to pay out a bet placed on a Declan Queeley trained pair by a stable lad who the bet was returning over 350,000, actually max payout was 100,000. They were refusing to pay because the race was under investigation. This story got publicised extensively on social media and followed up in various media sources as well. The dispute seemed to be that Ladbrokes said that the race was still under investigation, so they weren't paying out. But critics said, well, it's weighed in. It's weighed in for betting purposes, therefore you pay out. One thing that's absolutely certain, Lewis, is that the controversy over this is a sort of another blow to the trust that people place in bookmakers.
Oh yeah, it definitely leaves a sour taste. This is a race that took place on April 19th, 2024, a year on. There's two sides of it. One, the bookmaker side sort of dragging their feet, and the second, the IHRB. How can an investigation not be wrapped up within a year? But it seemed like it's still not wrapped up yet. Now they've decided to pay out after flight from social media. It's like, so, well, what were you waiting for then, guys?
I think that's exactly what they were waiting for. You know, in fairness, they said, well, we've spoken to IHRB now, so we're happy to pay out. But I think everyone recognises that wouldn't have happened had they not had a huge amount of criticism, particularly on social media.
Exactly, they've had 12 months to speak to them. It's crazy. And the guy who's involved isn't mentioned in the inquiry at all. So yeah. It's a real bad look. A real, you know, it tarnishes really that the industry again. They've got to work to resolve it, not just let it dust it under the carpet. These things aren't going away.
No. Finally, it's the two-year anniversary of the gambling white paper, a date I know we've all had circled in our calendars for many months. We've done some coverage today online in the paper. The sort of summary would be we still don't have the frictionless checks proposed in it. There's been no levy reform. There's been billions of pounds wiped out of online betting turnover on racing, and huge growth in the black market. So points out of 10 for the white paper implementation.
Yeah, one. Yeah, and that's probably a general.
I'll go minus one.
It's just painful, isn't it? And it leaves us in a state of flux. Like, nobody knows where this is going or what the long-term ramifications are. But like you say, it's effectively a £3 billion black hole in our finances, increased use of black market, And there's still a lack of certainty of how the white paper is going to affect finances for the foreseeable future. And on top of that, one of the recommendations is levy reform, or at least a discussion, and we're absolutely nowhere with that, and that is crucial for racing's funding going forward, so it's wholly inadequate.
Absolutely. Well, what more can we say on that subject? Nothing that hasn't been said a million times already, sadly. We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much, gents. Pleasure to have you. Thank you very much for you at home for joining us as well. We've got loads coming up this week. We'll have all the coverage of a massive, massive festival at Punchestown, and of course the Guineas weekend at Newmarket. And of course we'll be back here next Monday to chew that all over. So thanks again. I'll see you then. Until then, goodbye.